You're listening to the Patriots All 22 podcast with Evan Lazar and Adam Kirkchen.
This is unequivocally the sweetest.
Welcome into a new edition of the Patriots All 22 podcast. Evan Lazar here, and unfortunately, life comes at you fast sometimes, and we had some scheduling conflicts and technical difficulties, and we just couldn't get on the same page this week to get Adam Kirchen on the podcast, but that doesn't mean that there is no podcast, because I sat down with a proud member of Bills Mafia and Cover One's own Greg Thompson to talk about the matchup between the Patriots and the Bills on Monday Night Football. We broke down the X's and O's of the game. We also talked a little bit about the hatred of Bills fans towards the Patriots and had some fun with that as well. Next week, we'll be back in full swing when we break down the Green Bay Packers and Aaron Rodgers on Sunday Night Football, another primetime game for the Patriots with Adam Kirchen as usual. But for now, enjoy my interview with Greg. We are joined now by Greg Thompson of the Cover One Buffalo podcast. Go follow Cover One. Go follow Greg at Greg Thompson on Twitter. And Greg, it is Bills week, so we obviously have to have our friends up north. It's not a lot of times that we play people that are further north than we are, but we got it this week. Thanks for coming on and joining us tonight.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. Looking forward to a fun podcast.
Absolutely. So the question I wanted to ask you off the top here, and I understand why, but I wanted you to explain it to some of our listeners. Why did Bills Mafia hate the Patriots so much?
Fair question. Honestly, it's, you know, it'd be silly for me to say it's anything but a good chunk of jealousy. You know, obviously seeing success and someone, I'm a bit older than yourself, so I grew up in the phase where, I mean, the Patriots weren't all that good. A whole lot of Tony Eason, and even before Drew Bledsoe, that, you know, the Bills were going through their run with Kelly and Thurman and Bruce Smith and Andre Reed, that, you know, you guys were the nail and we were the hammer. And now having to go through 20 years of the opposite, it's rough. And then, you know, all the stereotypical things that people throw out there, that looking for any reason to slight Belichick and Brady. You know, I certainly have no you know, fondness in my heart for them, but it's impossible to say anything but praise of what they've achieved in the NFL. So it's easy to hate when people keep winning.
That's a very calm answer from a Bills fan. I appreciate it. I think that, you know, a couple of the players were talking about it today, you know, just at media availability, that, you know, in Buffalo, it's not just when you get to the stadium that they can feel the hate towards them. It's like when they get off the plane at the airport, like the signs and there's people like outside heckling the bus on the way by to the team hotel. And I love it. I think that it's, you know, as much as we've kind of switched places, like you mentioned, you know, before it was you guys in the 90s, now it's us now. It's still great to have that kind of rivalry, that kind of hated rivalry towards each other. And we don't necessarily have that, I would say, with the other AFC East teams. So I always love to play the Bills because it kind of brings back some of that old schoolness of it, where we really, not that the Patriots fans necessarily hate Bills fans, but we definitely don't like each other. And I think that that's a lot of fun because it just adds another element to the game beyond just football. You know, the Patriots don't really have a rival like that other than Buffalo right now that I can think of, you know, since Peyton Manning really moved on from Indianapolis and retired in Denver. When he retired, kind of the biggest, you know, other opponent for Brady kind of went with it. So it's always fun to play Buffalo. All right, let's move on to the game itself now. And obviously the Bills offense this season has, I'll just put it frankly, has struggled. Now the Patriots, I was kind of looking forward to seeing Josh Allen, and I hope we see him the second time around in that game here in a few weeks, but it's going to be Derek Anderson. What did you see from Derek Anderson last week? Did you see anything to have any sort of optimism as they wait for Allen to come back?
Well, the crazy part is maybe a little bit, although obviously the offense is historically poor. I think that, you know, depending on what metric you're looking at, some of the work that they do at Football Outsiders with DVOA, I think there's arguments that we're the worst offense in recorded history. So it's crazy to say this, but yes, there actually was a little bit of optimism prior to some of the big hits and a couple of you know, missed time plays. He was actually like 11 of 13 keeping the offense on schedule, on rhythm, and playing within reason. Now, obviously later on, I felt like he made some throws just in desperation, trying to get the team back into the game, that, you know, he's not that good. You know, he's just not a talented quarterback. He's a veteran player. He's got some savvy. He knows what he's supposed to do. But, I mean, he's been a backup and only a brief starter for a reason. So getting to the point where he can't be depended on to win you the game. But I think if we get back to some of the game plans and game script that we saw against Minnesota, against Tennessee, even against Houston, I think that he's a guy who can not lose you the game. So when he felt like he had to put the game on his shoulders, make some big plays, he was being aggressive, trying to go downfield. We got a couple balls intercepted and tipped up and intercepted that weren't the same as Nathan Peterman can't make a basic 10-yard out route and it gets, you know, baited in a pick six. But he's still not that good. I've told a lot of our fans that it's hard to grasp and frustrating, but you can be better than Nathan Peterman and still not a good NFL quarterback. And Derek Anderson's somewhere in that ballpark.
Yeah, that's a good answer. I think that from what I've seen of him, it just seems like a more NFL level offense with him under center versus what you saw with Peterman, who just, you know, obviously, especially with his struggles turning over the ball, is just a guy that is just a kind of imploding the game from within and whenever he's in the game. But I kind of like some of the things I saw from Anderson, and kind of what you mentioned is what I saw from him too, is that, you know, he can kind of hold the offense together timing wise. You know, the throws are coming out on time. He's not incredibly gifted and he's not elevating the scheme, but if the scheme gets guys open, or if Kelvin Benjamin can get himself open, or Charles Clay, he's hitting the ball, hitting the spots, hitting it on time, and he's at least not completely anchoring the offense like a Nathan Peterman was. So I think, you know, this Patriots defense, and I'm not just trying to hype up the Bills offense to make this a, you know, interesting. This Patriots defense has made a lot of quarterbacks this year look like they're Joe Montana. I mean, they had a game against, you know, Blake Bortles down there in Jacksonville, who just got benched last week for Cody Kessler, where Blake Bortles threw for almost 400 yards on this defense and really gave them a tough time. So I think that there are, you know, are a lot of questions up here in New England about how good this defense actually is. And I don't think that Derek Anderson's necessarily going to light the world on fire on Monday night, but I think that he's a good enough quarterback that if the Patriots have similar breakdowns as they have in weeks past, that he could at least take advantage of them within the framework of the offense, which I think is good news for the Bills, because, you know, Josh Allen's obviously the future. And I'm not the biggest Allen guy pre-draft, but he's really impressed me with what he's done in the NFL so far. So I think that he's really improved quite drastically from what he was last year in college. And it's at least Anderson can be a stopgap until he gets back healthy.
Yeah, that's exactly how we view it. I mean, Derek Anderson was clearly not brought here to play. He was brought in to be that veteran voice in the locker room. He's, you know, I mean, look at it in from a comparison. He is kind of Josh Allen. He was a big, tall, strong-arm quarterback who struggled with accuracy, didn't have the best touch, and now ended up building a 10-15 year career in the NFL. And now Allen's obviously more talented than Anderson was coming out, but that's the kind of guy that you want mentoring your quarterback, is a guy who's been through those same struggles, has had to work on the same technique, footwork, and focus to be able to, you know, capture the nuances of the short timing accuracy throws needed to be successful in the NFL. And then unfortunately he got hurt, and now Anderson's forced into play. And I don't think Anderson nor the Bills front office anticipated that, but you know, that's where we are today. And like you said, it's, I think both matchups are strength versus strength and weakness versus weakness.
Yeah.
And, you know, in fairness, I think the Patriots' strength is probably a little stronger than the Bills' strength, and their weakness is not quite as weak, but it is going to be an interesting matchup on both sides of the ball to see, can a soft, you know, vulnerable defense get right and get healthy against a historically poor offense, or maybe, you know, with another week under their belt. Derek Anderson played in that last game with honestly three practices and eight full days on the roster. A whole nother week is a legitimate difference of more practice and rhythm and timing with the receivers, more plays in the playbook. Does that actually bring a couple of things to light that can keep them competitive and maybe make this an interesting game?
Yeah, and no slight on Tyrod Taylor, but this Bills team obviously made the playoffs last year with a quarterback that wasn't a top five quarterback in the league. Sure. Or anything like that. So I think that they can lean on that defense. And I've been trying to tell Patriots fans this week that, you know, this Bills defense is legitimate. You know, you got to take them seriously. So if they can, you know, be something on offense in this game. And I think that, you know, like you said, it's kind of a situation where the Patriots fans and the Patriots themselves are really looking for this defense to show some consistency because it's just been hit or miss and a lot more miss than hit, I would say, on the defensive side of the ball. And if they give up a lot of points and a lot of yards to Derek Anderson on Monday night, things in New England are going to get very dicey for that sure. side of the ball. All right, let's move on to the skill players that Derek Anderson is going to have at his disposal. Now, it's probably good news for most of the Bills fans that LeSean McCoy was back at practice today, although he was limited. But I want to talk about, you know, we all obviously know how good of a player LeSean McCoy is, and we've faced him multiple times now over the last couple years, and he's just a menace to tackle in the open field especially. But outside of McCoy, who do you look to as kind of that go-to guy for Buffalo right now?
Really, it's probably still in the backfield. I mean, the most potent players they've had is McCoy and then probably Chris Ivory. Now, Kelvin Benjamin actually had his best game of the season last week. Sadly, best game of the season equates to four catches for 71 yards. But Kelvin Benjamin is a big receiver. He can do what big receivers do. If you throw up a 50-50 ball, he is 6'5", 6'6", 260, and can go up and is hard to, you know, position yourself against. He's basically a move tight end more than anything, but he can go up there and fight for a contested ball. But really, if I'll use the example of the Titans game, you know, the Titans are winning. There's 4.5 minutes left, and the Bills come out with the ball for a game-winning drive. They run an 11-play drive with 9 runs and 2 passes. And LeSean McCoy and Chris Ivory are 10 of the 11 touches. That was their most critical drive of the season in a game they had to win, and they put the ball in the hands of their running backs 10 of the 11 plays. And I think that speaks to where they feel that their talent is. So I feel like Kelvin Benjamin's a guy who the defense has to reasonably pay attention to. He is big. He's not a guy that you have to worry about crazy quick separation or breaks off of the line, but he can go up and make a play. But really, it's going to be, can they get that running game going? As you referenced, I think there's some reason for optimism that McCoy was in the non-contact jersey today and is still technically in the concussion protocol, but letting him do as much as they did in practice today, there's at least reasonable optimism that he's going to be ready with the extra day on the Monday night game. So with the concussion, you never want to take anything for granted or assume that he's going to play, but obviously that's an enormous difference having McCoy with Ivory being the kind of thunder to his lightning than trying to depend on just Chris Ivory with Marcus Murphy coming in. We have some concerns long-term with the backfield that our running backs are 30, 30, and 27, but in a one-game, one-season vacuum, they're a legitimate NFL thunder and lightning. If we had a real passing game around them, I think they'd be set up to have a really good season. So that's probably as much as the Patriots are going to have to game plan around is that backfield.
Yeah, Ivory's a good player. I think that, you know, he kind of got lost in that Jacksonville backfield and they were able to get him up here in Buffalo. And looking at that Colts game, I mean, he ran hard in that Colts game and it really was not his fault at all that they only scored 5 points. I mean, he did his job. Benjamin's an interesting guy, I think, too, because the Patriots obviously have Stephon Gilmore, who matches up well against some of those guys that have some size, but he's just watching him kind of over the last couple of, you know, this last year that he's been in Buffalo, his size is just rare. I mean, he's just freakishly big, and his ability to, you know, win at the contested catch point and stuff like that is just really rare. And I don't think that, you know, he's a guy, obviously, like you said, that's going to run away from anybody. But just the fact that he can do that, it has to be helpful for a quarterback like Anderson, who doesn't necessarily, you know, have that skill set like we were talking about earlier. So to have a guy that you can kind of just throw a jump ball to, like he did on that back shoulder throw that I think was the longest play of the game against the Colts last week, you know, having that ability to do that is rare. And also, you know, just one more guy to mention is tight end Charles Clay, sure, who the Patriots have had a ton of trouble covering tight ends, especially in the red zone, where they've given up 5 touchdowns to tight ends, which leads the league. So I think that, you know, I talked to Devin McCourty about that today, and I just said, you know, what do you guys need to do better? And basically he said that, you know, a lot of the times they're just losing tight ends in zone coverage. You know, guys are doing a good job of sitting down in zones and finding those soft spots. And I think Clay's one of those heady veterans that has the ability to do that as well. So he's certainly a guy that they have circled and they're going to be paying attention to as well to try to slow him down as well. It's funny talking to the Patriots, and this is true most weeks, you know, they do not look at all at the Buffalo Bills offense and say, you know, they're the worst in the league. We're going to overlook them. The team's only 2-5. I mean, the Patriots talk up Charles Clay and LeSean McCoy, you know, like they're Gronk and Walter Payton or something like that, you know, and it's good. You know, it's good to see that kind of, you know, approach to it, obviously. But, you know, I think that this Bills offense, even though it hasn't done very much in the past, right now the Patriots defense is vulnerable, and I'm very interested to see how they kind of fix some of the things. If McCoy plays in this game, throwing him the ball out of the backfield is definitely going to be an option.
Absolutely.
Charles Clay is, you know, going to be a factor in this game as well, and I expect Benjamin to be you know, Anderson's go-to target on the outside. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, kind of how who's available for the Bills on Monday night, and you know, which, like you said, it's kind of a weakness on weakness type situation. Which one of those weaknesses steps up and actually, you know, has a good game on Monday night?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I will say, you know, obviously I enjoy hating on the Patriots like any good Bills fan, but the ability, the culture that Belichick's built in, every coach and team talks about, you know, one week at a time, just focus on the next practice, just focus on the next game. What he's genuinely built from a structure that seems to, in all sincerity, you know, obligate each player to do that, that, you know, you're genuinely reprimanded if you look ahead. They focus on every team, look at the best opportunities for each player in each game. I think it keeps them focused. And like you said, I think that LeSean McCoy is a genuine weapon. Charles Clay is beleaguered often for signing a deal that was far richer than he deserved, but the fact that he's overpaid doesn't change the fact that he's a legitimate NFL tight end. He's not worth the $9 million a year that he gets, but he's still worthwhile, and he's actually pretty good in that, I think what you were touching on, kind of that sneaky area where he'll fake the block and then sneak out into the route where the defender thought that he was already a blocker and doesn't go to guard him, and now all of a sudden goes in to be open. So I think that's something we could see as well.
Yeah, he's a heady veteran player, and I don't have the stats pulled up, but I know that he's had some okay or big games against the Patriots in the past.
Yes, yes.
And they've definitely struggled with the tight ends this year. All right, let's move over to some positives for the Bills on the defensive side of the ball. This is where, you know, things get a little bit, you know, the sunshine comes out in Buffalo. And I wanted to start with the pass rush. First of all, I mean, this pass rush must just be fun to watch, especially coming from a team that doesn't have much of a pass rush in New England sometimes. I mean, these guys, Jerry Hughes, Lorenzo Alexander, they're having quite the season.
Yeah, it's been incredible. That piece of it, like you said, we're probably similar in what the Patriots have seen from frustration and not getting consistency from the offense, but in the different sense of where you said it's been more downs, the Bills have certainly had more ups. And we had the first six quarters of the season, we gave up 75 points. Then we went on a run of 3.5 games of the best defense in the NFL, so good that it brought them all the way up to third in the NFL in DVOA over those first six games. We expected to go in and, you know, really take it to a dinged up challenge Colts defense and kind of laid an egg. So we're in the same boat trying to figure out, hey, which defense is going to show up. That pass rush has been the key to the entire season. And it's, we don't have the Von Miller, Khalil Mack, DeMarcus Lawrence. I think Jerry Hughes is underrated, but we don't have that one guy that you have to double and triple team. But they do have an 8-man rotation across the defensive line that's phenomenal. They go, you know, your starters, you have Jerry Hughes, you have Kyle Williams, who's always given the Patriots trouble. You have Star Latuale, you have Trent Murphy. They bring in Shaq Lawson. They bring they picked up Jordan Phillips off waivers from the Dolphins. He's been a really nice addition. They bring in Harrison Phillips off a nice rookie from Stanford. Lorenzo Alexander actually rotates in a ton at third and long defensive tackle,
yeah,
which has been interesting, bringing him in the inside. So it's just that constant rotation. Most games, they don't have a single defensive lineman that plays over 60% of the snaps, and all of them play over 30% of the snaps. So it's a constant rotation of fresh NFL caliber defensive linemen, and being able to do that, they're also one that they run kind of that Tampa 2 cover two shell, and they only send four guys, but they'll line up seven or eight across the defensive line, and you have no idea which four are coming. So they very rarely blitz extra players, but you still don't know when the actual guys are going to come. They'll put the middle linebackers up there in the A gaps and posture as though they're going to blitz there. They'll look at, they actually bring a fair amount of corner and safety blitzes off the edge if they do bring anyone, but then they'll drop Jerry Hughes or they'll drop Trent Murphy back in coverage as well. So they're pretty good at shuffling it around and shifting it to do it. And when that defensive front is causing pressure, that's when they led the NFL in forced fumbles. They led the NFL in pressures. They're right up there in sacks. And if they can get that going, that's their only recipe for any kind of competitive game here that I think could possibly keep it, you know, within reason.
Yeah, Belichick said it right off the bat on his Wednesday press conference, which is kind of usually the first time where he really starts to dive into the next week's opponent. And he just came out and said, you know, really what the Bills just bring guys from everywhere. And you kind of just, you know, have to be ready for them bringing, you know, pass rushers from everywhere, whether it's blitzes or even just four-man pressures, like you said, where they're bringing guys off the edge or up the A-gap. And obviously they have, you know, a rookie in Tremaine Edmonds, who is just an absolute stud, you know, just has that complete cookie cutter type of linebacker for today's NFL with the speed and the size combination. And he can blitz up the A-gap with the best of them too. So you have a lot of guys that can rush the passer. I mean, it's pretty amazing. Lorenzo Alexander right now is PFF's top graded edge rusher, and he doesn't even play, you know, on early downs a lot of the time, because he's kind of like a sub rusher that they bring in on passing downs. So you have a guy like that that you kind of just have sometimes on the bench. That means you have some serious depth.
Yeah, and the man's 35 years old. It's crazy.
Yeah. And I think that the way that they're kind of built, it reminds me of kind of the Philadelphia Eagles blueprint, where like there's just eight guys that they can bring in at any given time that can rush the passer. But I think that the guy, similarly like how Brandon Graham is the guy in Philadelphia that everybody, you know, kind of keys on, I think that that's Jerry Hughes for the Bills. And he's one of my favorite pass rushers to watch, because he's so, you know, under the radar, I think, in the grand scheme of the NFL. But he has terrific get off, bend, hand usage, like everything that you would look for in a pass rusher. He's great at it. And some of that Minnesota game, I mean, he was just flat out dominant. Both him and Alexander were very good in that game. But Jerry Hughes with the strip sacks and stuff like that, I mean, he basically turned that entire game on a string there, just to get them the lead early on there.
Yeah, he was incredible. That game in particular, I think he had the second most pressures PFF had ever recorded in a single game.
Yeah.
I think he had 13 pressures in one game. It was ridiculous. And he's the kind of guy that, like I said, we don't have a you know, DeMarcus Lawrence. We don't have Khalil Mack. We don't have Von Miller. But I think that Jerry Hughes is legitimately in that next tier of defensive linemen. And, you know, I think a lot of fans on the Bills are petrified that this could be his last game in a Bills uniform. I think he's a guy I understand that it's very possible Kelvin Benjamin could get traded. I hope Shady doesn't, but it's possible. Jerry Hughes is one I want to see them extend. He's under contract next year. I'd love to see them give him an extra year or two and keep him as part of this rebuild, where I think he's the kind of guy that, although he is 30, I think he could have two or three more years, especially in the way that they're running this defensive end rotation, where they're not expecting 80, 90 snaps, percentage of the snaps. They're looking for 50, 60% that he can go hard in the small amount and then rotate in with other guys. And I think that's the kind of thing that he could still get another two seasons after this out of that.
Yeah, he's one of those guys where the sack totals are good, but they're not great. But when you look at the pressure totals and the disruptions on a play-to-play basis, I mean, he's just off the charts. Those two guys, Alexander and Hughes, are both in PFF's top 10 in their grading among edge defenders. Having two of those guys like that is pretty good. And then obviously Kyle Williams is kind of the cleanup guy in the middle there, and they force a quarterback up in the pocket, and they write into Williams, who has six sacks this season, still chugging along there in Buffalo. I can't. What year is this for Kyle Williams? I mean, we're getting up there now.
Oh yeah, 13. He's right there. You have a defensive players. You don't get over 30 all that often, and to have Hughes at 30, Kyle at 33, Lorenzo at 35. Yeah. You know, that's some serious contributions from that kind of age.
Absolutely. So let's move on now to the run defense, which kind of got gashed last week against Indianapolis for 220 yards. My question to you is. Was that just one bad week, do you think, or do you think that running the football on the Bills is kind of a way to beat them?
Well, I mean, it's a fair question, because the results are the results. Now, even in some of the rough games early on, even the shellacking from the Ravens in the first game, they couldn't really run the ball. Even the Chargers game, there was a lot out of the backfield from Melvin Gordon and Austin Eckler, which makes me a little nervous about James White, but they weren't able to run the ball. So Marlon Mack got his first career 100-yard game and was the first 100-yard rusher that the Bills had allowed in quite a while, all season this year and into last year. So it's something that I'd like to say that it was an anomaly and just some weird matchups. And, you know, sometimes the game script gets away from you and all of a sudden some things fall apart. So that's certainly what a Bills fan has to hope for. But obviously the results are what they are. It just happened this past week. As you touched on, not only Tremaine Edmonds, but Matt Milano, they have two young, really athletic, really fast, really aggressive linebackers. And what some smart teams have done is use that aggression against them. They've been susceptible to play action. They've bit hard on some counters and some run fakes coming back the other direction. So I hope that that's something that obviously they're aware of and start to work on that communication and how to manage that in practice this week. But it's certainly something I'd be hitting on if I was McDaniels or if I was the Pats offense.
Yeah, I'm actually writing about this tomorrow, because those G schemes and those counter pulls and stuff like that, that's Dante Scarnecchia and Josh McDaniels' bread and butter right there. I mean, that's kind of the running game that the Patriots have run for the last 20 years or so under Belichick. He's always been a power run guy, you know, really wanted to impose his will on the ground. And I think that what you hit on was exactly right about those athletic linebackers. I think a lot of people up here in New England, we don't have those types of athletes at linebacker, so they get caught up, and we need speed, we need athleticism. And not that Milano and Edmonds aren't good players, but speed doesn't always mean good. You know, you have to be fast and smart, and sometimes those guys, and Edmonds obviously is only in his, what, sixth or seventh game of his NFL career at this point, so you understand it. But some of those guys can be susceptible, like you said, to the misdirection. That one play that sticks out was that reverse where they flipped it to Nyheim Hines. They pulled a guard one direction. It looked like it was just a counter handoff, and Mack ended up flipping it to Hines on a reverse, and it gained a big play. I think that those types of plays are kind of the way to go about this if you're the Patriots. Now, I think it helps the Bills' cause that it sounds like Sony Michel is not going to play in this game. So having a real running game where you're toting the rock 30 or 35 times without your best running back probably isn't going to happen. But I think a lot of those types of counter plays and stuff like that with the pulling guards, with the extra offensive linemen that Indianapolis ran last week could all be in play this week for the Patriots. And I think that it especially what it does is it slows down that pass rush a little bit, and it puts the offense, or the Patriots in this case, the Colts last week, in a situation where they don't have to have Tom Brady drop back the pass 40 times in this game. Andrew Luck only threw it 23 times last week, and he was throwing it 48 times a game entering that game. So it was a completely deviation for the Indianapolis Colts to what they had been doing. So I think that it's an interesting element to this game, where I think that, like you said, when we were talking about the pass rush, the formula here for the Bills to have a good chance in this game is to get after Brady. And if you can establish a running game to kind of keep those pass rushers honest a little bit, then all of a sudden, it becomes more of a balanced situation where they aren't just pinning their ears back and going after Brady like they kind of did in that Minnesota game, where they knew Minnesota didn't have Dalvin Cook. They knew that they weren't going to have much of a running game to go up against, so they pinned their ears back, and they got to Cousins 4 times and had some strip sacks and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, playing the run on the way to the quarterback, I think, is their best opportunity here. And, I am here to strike fear into the hearts of every Patriots fan and call for the upset. All right, I can't support that. it's something where I think that their best opportunity is I think we have some of the recipe that goes into one of those competitive games. You have a team that's disrespected, been on the road for a while, coming back home. You have a game that matters a lot more to the Bills fans than it does to Patriots. It's our only primetime game. It's a nighttime game where they're going to be sauced up all day, and you're going to hear them at full volume.
Yeah. I'm going to put my head down when I walk into the stadium.
I hope that people are at least respectful to you, but yeah, prepare yourself. So I think that going through that avenue, hoping that they can at least bring, maybe a competitive edge early on. You can't ever expect interceptions from Brady, but I think that it's reasonable to think that they can bring pressure and maybe get lucky with a strip sack fumble, get a short field that Anderson can try to take advantage of, maybe get a big play from LeSean McCoy. My guess is we see a pretty competitive environment early on. And then as the game goes, I think that just the talent differential and the gap that they have there in the, especially the upper echelon talent with, Brady, and if Gronkowski plays, and some of the talent you have there is eventually going to be too much, and they're going to pull away. But my hope is that we at least see a competitive game that keeps us engaged, keeps us interested. I'd love to see a couple weird things bounce our way, a couple beneficial penalties, a positive turnover differential for the Bills. I think it could keep it competitive and keep them in the game. And then, hey, it's at home. It's a primetime game. It's a game that means a lot to, a ton to our team. It's the biggest game of the year, for our team. Those kind of things, you can see some excitement and some passion, maybe bring out an extra play or two. And then, we can just cross our fingers that it keeps it competitive.
Yeah. So you mentioned Gronkowski. That was the last point I wanted to hit on. He was limited today in practice, but he was back out there. And this is his hometown game in Buffalo. Yep. And it's going to take a lot to keep Gronkowski out of this game, I think, because he always gets geared up for these games in Buffalo because his whole family is going to be there and all that kind of stuff. Obviously, going back to last year, he has a little bit of history with Tre'Davious White at this point. And I just wanted to ask you, do you think that beef is still there, or do you think that, it's going to be more talk than the fireworks ended up being in that game? Because I think that if Gronkowski plays in this game, there's a pretty good chance that him and Tre'Davious White are going to be matched up, pretty frequently, I would say.
Yeah, it's a really weird dynamic because it's funny, prior to that game last year, and I'll give it that I don't think Gronkowski has a history of dirty plays or inappropriate plays, but that was a momentary loss of judgment, and his reaction was dirty and was uncalled for. Right prior to that, he was easily the least hated Patriot. He was kind of that lovable meatball that everybody, he's our hometown guy, and he's a Patriot, but we still kind of like him. And he has that lovable approach to him. Now it's obviously flipped pretty aggressively the other way. Yeah. The Bills defense is full of a lot of really chippy, really edgy players that like to get those extra hits in, you know, Jordan Poyer, Micah Hyde, Lorenzo Alexander, even those are the kind of guys that really thrive on that. No one's going to take any dirty shots at him or anything crazy like that, but it's something that I think has added a little bit of edge to what, you know, we talked about at the beginning is already a big rivalry and a very heated matchup. So I think it's interesting that, if we see that out there, I think Tre'Davious is one of the probably chippiest and mouthiest players on our entire defense. He talks nonstop
I would imagine that, and I don't remember exactly what Gronk said after the game, but I would imagine that that's kind of how it started, was that there was probably a lot of, because Gronk will talk too, obviously, as we know. And so I think there was probably a lot of jawing going back and forth between those two.
Oh yeah, I'm certain of it because he talks trash to our own team. He talks to everybody. So I mean, now granted, he backs it up. He's been pretty fantastic to this point for only a year and a half into his career. But he talks a lot. So I'd love to see that matchup just from a skill standpoint. Obviously, there's a huge size discrepancy, and we have some speedy linebackers like Milano that can keep up with him a little bit. But I'd love to see that matchup just for the drama of it and the history and what they have going out there. I'd love to see them go at each other a couple times in some big high leverage plays in the red zone on third down, things like that.
Yeah, I would love it too, because when the Patriots went down to Jacksonville, obviously there was a lot of talk of Jalen Ramsey versus Gronk. We really didn't get to see it. But this Tre'Davious White matchup last year, both games, they played against each other a lot. They lined up against each other a lot, especially when Gronk was either in the slot or flexed out wide at wide receiver. It was mostly White. Obviously, I think that the Bills have some guys to throw at Gronk, but that other teams might not have all those types of options. You mentioned the linebackers. I think Edmonds is kind of one of those guys that they drafted with thoughts of having a matchup like a Gronkowski. Micah Hyde has done it in the past, and obviously White's done it in the past. So it's a tough matchup, I think, for Gronk. But he, like I said, he always gets up for these Buffalo games because of his hometown, you know, connection there and all those things. And I would love to see him and Tre'Davious White go, you know, toe to toe a couple of times if Gronk is out there. I think, like you said, you know, it just adds to the fire here of this matchup, and it would be a lot of fun. But I don't know if the Patriots are going to have Gronk go in this one. That was kind of the way that it was trending last week when he was, you know, announced to be out of the game kind of late in the process. They said that he should be ready for Monday night against Buffalo. But I think it's kind of a matter of managing the long term versus the short term, you know, with the Patriots. And obviously, you know, thinking about January potentially, even this early on in the season.
If it was me and I had the long term potential that the Patriots do and have a player like Sony Michel, like Rob Gronkowski, against the Bills, there's no possibility I'd play him. You know, just understanding that I'm going to assume that, you know, having Tom Brady with a slightly subpar cast can still do what's necessary to pull out a win, even on the road. You never take any NFL team for granted. Just ask the Minnesota Vikings. It's something that, you know, you never want to assume. But, you know, with the long-term potential and the aspirations that this roster obviously has, I actually would be a little bit surprised if we see Gronkowski just for that long-term run. Now, again, I think if he has anything to do with it, like you said, of course he's going to want to play in front of, you know, a lot of hometown family and friends. But I'll be honestly surprised if we see him out there. Maybe you see, like they've done in the past, just the high leverage options where you see him on third down, you see him in the red zone, 20 to 30 snaps, maybe something like that is kind of the compromise where they could still give him some run but not risk it too much.
Yeah, the Gronkowski, I compare him a lot to like a sports car that you keep in the garage in the summertime. You bring it out. That's kind of how the Patriots, even when he plays and he plays 100% of the snaps, sometimes you can just tell by his route tree that they're kind of trying to protect him and not sending him over the middle a ton. They're not targeting him in situations where he might, you know, be susceptible to getting hurt. They kind of leave the cover on him for, you know, some of these games in the regular season. And then when they really need him, that's when they take him out and they say, all right, you know, like against the Chiefs, for example, they knew it late in that game that they were going to need Gronkowski to step up on that game-winning drive to get them down the field, and that's when they threw you know the fade to him out of the slot. I think those are the type of situations. I agree that maybe, you know, he convinces Belichick to let him play a little bit in this game just because it's a divisional opponent, because of the hometown thing. But it's going to be an interesting one, because I think that the Patriots, even though they've won four games in a row, there's kind of a feeling, and I know this is kind of a spoiled Patriots fan thing, but there's kind of a feeling that the four games that they've won haven't exactly been up to Patriots standards completely, especially on the defensive side of the ball. So it's going to be interesting to see. But this was awesome, Greg. I really appreciate you coming on. It's always great to talk to, you know, the enemy, so to speak, you know, when we have these types of matchups. And I hope to have you on again in I think it's December, right?
Yeah, I think we've got a little bit of a stretch here. You want to know what's crazy? We are now in week 8. This is the Bills' first division game of the season. So we've actually got
second. They played Miami, you know, a few weeks ago at Gillette, but that was the first one. This was only the second one.
Yeah, we're going to play just before Christmas on the 23rd. Cool. I do anticipate that we're guessing that they probably hold out Allen until after the bye week, and that we see him right after Thanksgiving. So we think we're going to play the Patriots, the Bears, and the Jets, then the bye week, and then they'll probably bring Allen back for the Jags game is my guess. And then we'll see him for that final 6-week stretch. And then that'll be nice, because then you're talking about him having four more games and then seeing the Patriots really, you know, as mature as he's going to be this season, and see, you know, what kind of additional steps in development maybe he's made by then.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that one. I was hoping we were going to get two Josh Allen games this year, because I'm just really excited to see the guy live. I mean, everybody that's seen him live is like, his arm is just something special that you've never seen before. So I'm really looking forward to hopefully seeing him. Is there anything that you want to plug or let the audience know what you got coming down or anything?
Yeah, no, real quick, I know, as you said, we've got a lot of great content over at Cover One Buffalo, you know, obviously for focused on Bills fans, but Eric Turner is a phenomenal film analyst and does a lot to kind of break down film, is hooked up with The Athletic, and is really one of the top guys I've seen in the NFL as far as film breakdown goes. So come on over to CoverOne.net, check that out. Find me on Twitter at Greg Thompsett, GREGTOMPSETT. I have a lot of fun going back and forth, and certainly have a lot of fun with Patriots fans. I'm a pretty good-hearted guy. I don't get too nasty. We have plenty of trolls on the internet. We don't need any more. So I like to have fun and go back and forth and have intelligent discussion with anybody who's looking to do that on Twitter.
Awesome. Thanks, man. I appreciate you coming on.
Thank you.
Thanks once again to Greg for coming on the podcast, and make sure you go follow Greg and Cover One on Twitter and listen to their podcast. They do a lot of great work, so make sure to go check that out. For me, on clnsmedia.com, you can go check out my work on the Bills offense and the Bills defense and my Patriots game plan, and we will have full coverage wall-to-wall on Monday from Buffalo, both pregame, during the game, and postgame on clnsmedia.com, on the CLNS Media YouTube page, and on the CLNS Media Twitter account at PatriotsCLNS. So make sure you go follow all those things and check out all that stuff, because we will be in Buffalo breaking down the game. Obviously, go check out Mass Varsity, where you can find all the great stuff that Adam Kirchen is doing with BC football, local high school football, if that's your thing too. But we will be back next week, like I said, to break down the Green Bay Packers, and I promise that we'll be at full capacity for that. And it's going to be one of the better matchups of the season, with Aaron Rodgers and company coming into town. I think this is the first time that Aaron Rodgers has played at Gillette Stadium, because he was injured for that first game where we had the Matt Flynn experience. So it'll be interesting to see this matchup. Brady versus Rodgers, a lot of fun. But until then, signing off, I'm Evan Lazar. Thanks for listening.